History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by the U.S. Army, proudly honoring the men and women from every branch of our armed forces whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are some stories out there, stories that we need to hear that should not go untold. And we want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, we always learn so much. We're educated, we're entertained, and often inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. I'm in San Jose, California today with 96-year-old Forrest Hilton. He's lived in San Jose for more than 70 years. The Del Monte Canning Company sent him here. But there was another outfit he was working for before that. In World War II, he was a Navy man, and he participated in landings you've heard a lot about over the years, and we'll hear about it from him. But let's start earlier than that, Forrest. What was it like in Pine Bluff, Arkansas? You're an only child? Or were you a busy boy?
I was pretty much a hunter and fisherman when I was a child. I liked to fish and catch a little fish for the table and hunt for opossums and raccoons and squirrels, tree squirrels that we ate. That was part of the diet that we had. And the Depression was on from 1929 when the Depression started, and it was pretty hard to make a living. Some men worked for 10 cents an hour and lucky to get a job. Just wasn't much work. And we stayed there till around 1937 when we come to California. Our first stop in California to work or look for a job was in Kingsburg. We had a Model A Ford sedan and a little two-wheel utility trailer that we had all of our belongings in. And our first work was cutting grapes, raisin grape, Thompson seedless grapes. We began to get a little money in our pocket. We landed in Kingsburg with $7 to our name. Wow. Did have an uncle in Arkansas that if we got down to where we couldn't eat, he would send us a little money, but he didn't have very much either. But anyway, we started prospering, working in the fruit, pick peaches and grapes, and then we did go to Exeter for olives. Then eventually we ended up in Monterey. My mother worked in the cannery there. It wasn't Del Monte, it was some other cannery. And my dad would hit and miss on whatever he could get. Then along come the war, or the war was in the making, and it was beginning to get some jobs around for getting ready for the war. So we went back to Arkansas, and I had an uncle that had got me a job of learning to operate tractors and earth-moving equipment, because he was building right out of Pine Bluff a large arsenal where they was going to build war machines. So I worked there for a while, and then we had a bad winter, and I decided to come back to California. So I come back, and I had got in the Operating Engineers Union, so I did get a job as a tractor driver. And then the war come along, and I remember you, on some of your programs, you'd ask if the person remembered where they were and what they was doing when Pearl Harbor was attacked. Well, I know exactly where I was. We lived in Pacific Grove. A second cousin of mine and myself used to like to go target shooting with a little 22 rifle. So that day, that Sunday, he and I went out in the Carmel Valley and popped a few rounds with a 22, and we come back home. When I drove in the driveway, my dad met me. He said, "Hey, son, we're bad news." "What's that?" "The Japanese have attacked Pearl Harbor." "Pearl Harbor? Where's that?" and he didn't know any more about it than I did. But it was on the radio anyway, and President Roosevelt was making these speeches, and everything was Pearl Harbor. And we were Fort Ord was already built. And my dad worked at Fort Ord building and removing a cavalry outfit. There was a horse cavalry down there between Monterey and Salinas. So they abandoned the cavalry, and Fort Ord was a large fort. training center. And then I didn't go in the Navy right away. I got a job lengthening a runway at the Monterey Airport, and the Navy had taken it over. So we had to lengthen the runway for the airplanes, because it was just a little small, hardly any airplanes flew in there before the war. And I got in a little accident there one night, and everything was blacked out. As soon as it started to get dark, everybody had to close their drapes, their windows, and turn off the lights, and no street lights in Monterey.
And the reason for people who wouldn't understand this or can't follow you is there's this fear, this concern that the Japanese are going to attack the mainland, and Monterey's right on the coast, so you're turning everything off so you're not a target for the Japanese, right?
That was it. So they and Fort Ord started moving their artillery over to ward off any invasion, and it was a real busy place going on, but in the dark. So I ended up, I was a 1A in the draft, but I had deferment as long as I was working there on that airport. And one night I had everything blacked out, and I run into a truck that had stalled out in the middle of the spread where you'd spread in the dirt. I guess he'd broken an axle or something. I never knew, because I wasn't around much longer after that. And I did hit the side of this water spray truck that would spray the water on our fresh dirt that we was spreading, and kind of lost control of the vehicle. I was running a turnip pole. So the grade foreman, he got all upset and used some pretty bad language to me, and I was just a kid, you know, and so I told him, I said, oh, I don't have to take this kind of foolishness for what you're saying, and I quit. And he told me I couldn't quit. He said, you're froze. If you quit, I'll have you in the Army within a week. So I said, well, do whatever you have to, but I'm going home right now. And I went home, told my mother, Mom, I got to go. So I went to Salinas, went to the city hall where they had recruiting stations. And first stop I saw, I guess it was a sergeant or something, the Marine Corps, but I didn't want to go in the Army. I just, something told me not to go in the Army. So this man, he looked up and said, something I can do for you? Well, and I went over and put my hands on his desk. He told me, get your hands off my desk. Stand up like a man. He said, what do you want? You want to join up? And I told him, no, I just thought I'd stop by and say good morning. And I walked down there, and he told me, come back here. And I told him, well, you can't tell me what to do. I'm not in the Marine Corps now. So I guess I might have been a little smart aleck guy, kid. So I went down the hall just a little ways, and there was a Navy recruiting station. And there was a man in there sitting at a desk, and he got up and come shook hands with me, asked me if you'd like to join up, and oh, yeah, I'd like to join up. So that's the way I got in the Navy. That afternoon, I had gone back to Monterey and left my car, and I got my cousin to take me back to Salinas, where I caught the train to go to San Francisco. The next day, we went through all it, because I already had my physical information from my draft board, so it was pretty easy for that. So I just went in, and so they put us through a more physical and mental questions that they gave me. And so right away, well, there was a whole bunch of us that day. That night, they swore us in, and they sent it by train to Los Angeles that night. From the Los Angeles, they went by bus to San Diego boot camp. I think I was probably about 2 weeks or maybe 3 weeks into the boot camp when a man come over. We was out on the grinder marching. So they stopped this march for this man to say what he was there for. And he was asking for volunteers for the amphibious force, for the landing craft school at Coronado. So I volunteered, and two other guys, I didn't know them, but they volunteered. They were full adults. They wasn't kids like most of us was. So I went through the landing craft school, learning how to get the boats in to the beach and let the ramp down and bring them back up and get out without being capsized and back out. You'd go straight in, back out. Oh, it was no, if you could drive a car, a little bit of training and you could master it, you know. Wasn't too much to it.
And you said you volunteered. Does that mean no one ever told you you're not supposed to volunteer in the military?
Oh, you people yelling at you. You'll be sorry. That was a famous saying. You'll be sorry. But we wasn't there too long, 2 or 3 weeks at the most in that training. They did have, I guess, about 4 LCPRs, I think they were at that time. And they had a couple LCMs, the twin-engine tank gliders. So, and the rest of it was all sagebrush and a couple tents. They'd take us over for the day, but they'd usually leave maybe 4 guys there to be on guard duty, or the guard the boats, and make sure that nobody tampered with the boats. They'd just pull them up on the beach. And it was interesting, and I began to like it. And then we went for some training at Oceanside Advanced Marine Combat Training Center. I guess it's Camp Pendleton now. It was just to give us a little ability to protect ourselves in case we lost our boats and on an island there on a landing. We learned to fire machine guns and throw hand grenades, and because if you lost your boat, you could protect yourself a little bit. You just have to go in with the Marines. But I never lost a boat, and when I went aboard Haywood, I was in 14 different landings. I have 6 battle stars. The ship has 7. But a little bit later on, we went up in the Aleutian Islands at Attu and Kiska.
Yeah, and I want to hear about that. But you said, you know, you never lost a boat. But I've heard there was something you did lose. All the band's instruments? How'd that happen?
Yeah, well, I was new on that ship, too, just not too long had I been aboard. But we went aboard the ship and on a shakedown cruise, because the ship had been in dry dock in Los Angeles. And they took some Army amphibious training on landing for the Army from Fort Ord. We went on a little cruise down in south of San Diego and some of those islands. We landed on one or two of the islands, landed those troops on board, and we was learning, too. We finished that little training mission. For some reason, I have no idea why they decided to land those troops at Fort Ord. And that is a terrible surf. That was the worst surf I've ever been in. Because I told some of these guys that went to school with me, I said, you haven't seen anything. If we land out there before it Ord, you're going to be lucky if you don't get drowned. And I was in a LCM, and myself and a crew, and we did have an Army band on board the ship. Anyway, we went to Monterey, whole bunch of ships, and pulled a landing there. And on our last trip in, took a bunch of just miscellaneous load of stuff. And that Army band, those instruments, was in that bunch of stuff on that landing barge. So we went in at night, and I wasn't the coxswain of the boat. I was a deckhand. As soon as we got in through that terrible mess in there where the surf was doing to these boats that was already gone in, this boat coxswain said, let the ramp down, and as soon as that ramp hits the ground, start winding her back in. Because you had to crank them in with 2 men on a hand-powered winch to raise the ramp. And said, let the ramp down and start cranking it back up. And can't stay in here very long. And so we let it down when we got on the hit bottom on the beach. And here come a big wave right over the top of us and washed all that stuff out. And there went those instruments in those cases and... But it was dark, and you couldn't see hardly anything. It was terrible. It's a wonder we hadn't all got drowned.
And I'm not trying to be a comedian, but I'm just thinking maybe that's how, you know, when we see these Disney movies and the crabs and the seahorses are playing saxophones, now we know where they got them.
Yeah, that'd be a good chance they would get I guess the guys who was already on the beach, would they retrieved that stuff, I suppose. But it was dark. That was the first time I'd seen Jeeps driving it. There they'd come out of those boats, out of the LCMs, and away they'd go right through the water and up and through the sand. But I never could figure why they decided to try something like that. Day and night, and it took us a couple of days, we lost one off of our ship, one big truck, 6x6, Army truck loaded with supplies for the Army, was bound for Attu. They hoisted it over the side and was let it down in an LCM. One of the cables broke, or the hook broke, on the truck. And it hung down there, and it flopped down, and the back end of the truck was down close to the water, and it was just holding it up by the front hooks. They had an LCM there to take it, but they didn't dare try to put that truck in that LCM hanging down from the radiator up. So then they had to cut it loose, and it went to the bottom of Monterey Bay. But anyway, we went ahead and had our landing in Attu. That worked out pretty successful, but the Army took a real beating on, they didn't have the proper footwear, shoes, waterproof shoes, and there was snow on the ground, and they got their feet wet, and it was cold, and the fog would be so heavy you could hardly see your hand before you. A lot of these men froze their feet, and they had to have them amputated, because they come right aboard that ship. That was a hospital evacuation ship. Soon as we get the troops off of the ship and their supplies off, well, they'd set it up to start receiving casualties from the beach. And we'd have a large surgical staff, and doctors would come aboard the ship just for that landing that we was going to make, and just in case they was needed, in which most cases they were needed, because a lot of casualties from the Marines. We operated mostly with the Marine Corps, 2nd Marines and 6th Marines.
So we all understand your role in this. So you are piloting one of these landing craft and taking those Marines into the beach and then taking casualties back?
Well, right after Attu, I decided I wanted to get not drive the boat, but be a boat engineer. That was a little more important. Keep those engines running. And I put in to transfer into the engineer's department and learn about those diesel. Well, it wasn't diesel engines to start with. We had Hall-Scott gas engines in those landing barges. 100-octane gas used, aircraft gasoline. And those things didn't work out very well. They'd catch on fire sometimes, and sometimes they wouldn't. You couldn't get them started from that fog, especially when we was up there, when the fog would be so thick that the wires would get wet. Anyway, they started changing them over to diesel, to General Motors 6-cylinder diesel engines. And I wanted to learn those engines. Then I also asked if I could be in the engine room when we was underway. And when we'd go into landing, then I'd be relieved, and I could go back in the boats. And I was in a salvage boat. And that was one that would, we'd go in with the first wave of boats and be there in case anybody got in trouble. But I did stand watches in the engine room, and I learned a lot. Everybody was very helpful, and most of those guys on that ship was reserves from Chicago, from the Great Lakes, and some of them had two hitches in already. They were well-qualified engine people. That ship had four 325-pound superheated steam boilers and two Elliott turbines engines, high-pressure and low-pressure engines, 4,500 horsepower each. I enjoyed everything except going back and checking the bearings on the propeller shaft in the shaft alley when you was in enemy territory especially. We had two guys. I was a port oiler, and there was down on the second deck down, there was a starboard oiler. We had to take turns on every hour. One of us would have to go back and check the bearings on the main propeller shaft. I think there was 16 bearings, big Babbitt-lined bearings that run in oil. But we'd have to go check them for heat. I didn't like that, because when you go in that propeller shaft, they would close the door on you, and you couldn't unlock it from the inside. After you made your trip and come back to the door, you would just ring a bell. They had a button there, you'd push a button, and the other man would open the door for you and let you out. Then you'd close that door and lock it down again. I didn't like that. That was a little scary. I could see that I'd never made a submarine man.
But there would be even scarier moments ahead for Forrest Hilton in the Pacific. When we come back, more of what he experienced in the Aleutians. And also, November 1943, the Battle of Tarawa. And how he helped save a damaged cruiser the following year in the Battle of Leyte Gulf. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.